Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, 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 welcome. You have found us cooking like a pro here with Chef Cal. So glad that you joined us today here at KCNR. We found us at 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. And you can also find us at cookinglikeapropodcast.net. You can send a question in there and my wife will answer it, but my wife won't answer it tonight because my wife's not here. I have my good friend, Chef Sadie Cougar. Sadie, thanks for stepping in. Mrs. Chef had her some family obligations, so I appreciate you coming by to chat with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, gosh, I don't even know how many. You still look young, but so I don't know how many decades we've known each other, but it's been several. So, but anyway, cooking like a pro. So today we wanted to talk about a variety of things. Again, if you'd like to chime in, you can. So we'll give the phone number out at 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. And I've been looking at some pots and pans and, talking to my stainless steel guy and we just kind of got to talking about the different things that are out there and that are available. And I think what you really want is you want specific, types of pans, not what they're made out of, but the sizing of them. You know, you want certain things like a stock pot, right? You want a big stock pot. And to be honest, if you, as far as the material goes, you really just want to go with stainless steel. Regardless of that, and besides the just going with, you know, stainless steel, the next thing you have to have is you have to have a heavy bottom pot. You want all of the pan, your pans, regardless what kind of pan it is, you want the bottom to be very thick, because that's what's going to keep your whatever's cooking in there from burning, and a real heavy bottom pot will kind of spread out the heat and allow it to things to cook more evenly. So one of the things you definitely want to do is find, do you have a favorite pot that you pot, pan?
I like my little it's a 2-quart pot. I use that all the time.
Yeah, get that certain size that just works good at home.
Yeah, it's a workhorse.
Yeah. And so, you know, besides stock pots, you got sauce pot. Now when I talk about stock pot or a sauce pot, we're talking about a pot that has a handle on each side, so it has 2 handles. And you get into sauce pans, so now you're talking about pans that have just 1 handle. So you have sauce pans, you have saute pans, the one with the square edges instead of being smooth, like you, so you can't really flip on it. That's called a sauteur. Most of the time, that's really, we kind of refer to that as a frying pan.
And a wok,
yes. There's a paella. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them out there. And that's one of the things that's exciting is as you build your kitchen and your inventory, you come up with different gadgets and such. And we're going to talk a little bit more about gadgets in the next block. But you start, you know, purchasing appliances that work for specific things. Like, you know, this item, every time I want to make a paella, I know I got a paella pan.
Or my egg pan.
An egg pan. Yeah. And that's either going to be, you know, if you're doing it for eggs, then it should be 6 inches, right? Yeah. And then if it's, 8 inches across, then you're talking about something you'd usually use for an omelet.
Or a large quesadilla, you know?
Yeah, large quesadillas. The standard size pan for saute is 12 inches. That's the standard size pan you're going to use in a restaurant. But the one thing about those pans that you cook on top of the stove, remember, a lot of those pans are also going to go from the stovetop straight into the oven.
If it doesn't have a plastic handle.
Yeah. Right? So you have to make sure that the handle is high temp. It's something that's going to, you know, be able to handle the 400 or 500 degrees, whatever you have your oven. I'm kind of a guy, you know, most recipes that you see out there when it comes to cooking in an oven, a standard oven, you're looking at oh, I don't know, something like around 350 degrees. But I always like cooking things really hot. I like cooking them in a really hot oven because in the restaurant business, you're always trying to cook things really fast because the customer wants their food fast. But you have to really be spot on with your timing because at 500 degrees, you can burn something up super fast.
I know it's not practical in the restaurant, but what about cast iron? I love my cast iron pan, but it just seems like a dying class of pans.
Well, the challenge with a cast iron is that it's, I guess if you want to get more minerals into your diet, you can by doing that. Generally, we'll start off with copper, super thin. The heat comes right across the top, the bottom of it. So you tableside cooking, they do a lot of that. And then you go with aluminum. Aluminum, the problem is it starts to pit, and aluminum just, especially if you're cooking with anything with acid, you're going to get more than your probably FDA regulated aluminum in your, lasagna.
You don't want to do that to your sauce, right? Your spaghetti sauce?
No, you don't. You don't. So really stainless steel. Stainless steel is where it's at. But when you go into cast iron or enameled cast iron, certain things, yes. Dutch ovens, of course, because you're cooking in the ground and for the most part, you want something that's super thick all the way around. Cast iron is something that I have, cast iron pans, and I use them specifically for specific things.
Fried chicken. What's your favorite dish?
Yeah, for cast iron, it's going to be anytime I want to blacken something.
Okay.
Yeah, anytime I want to blacken something, let's say we want to blacken, red snapper's a fairly popular dish to blacken, and you just hit your fresh fish, make sure you take out all the pin bones, you don't want any skin on it either, and you're going to lightly brush it with butter and then tap it down into, Cajun seasoning. And you just buy Cajun seasoning. You can make your own Cajun seasoning. It's just you're going to have, some ground chilies in there and, things like, paprika and chili powder or maybe some spices. So you got this rub, basically, and you're just going to take this buttered piece of fish and you're just this fillet, and you're just going to tap it down into the seasoning, and you're going to have your cast iron pan white hot. I mean, as hot as it can literally get. That was one of the biggest challenges. In the restaurant business, no big deal because we got those big old hoods over top of us. All right. But at home, I've ran people out of the house before because once you put that spicily seasoned fish on there and it smokes, what you need to do is it needs to have the fish perfectly cooked and have it blackened on the outside. And it's difficult to do that unless your pan is super white hot. You're talking maybe a minute and a half on one side and then maybe another, 90 seconds or so on the other side too. Goes real fast. It's got this real crispy spice on it. And then we serve that with a raspberry sauce.
Mm.
So to help kind of counterbalance the capsaicin and all the seasoning on there.
I like the sweet and spicy.
Yeah. That's one of the things when we look at these flavor profiles is how do we get things to match?
Mm-hmm.
Right? How do we take one thing and especially in wine pairing, it's even more evident. But in food, the same thing. If you have something that's, maybe a little bit bitter, then maybe you need to add something that's a little bit sour. Or maybe you need to add something that's a little bit sweet. So there's a lot of different things you can kind of consider. But if you're not looking at that flavor profile of, okay, I'm tasting what I'm eating, you're not going to pick it up. Right? So. Anyway, so there's a lot of them out there. The nonstick pans are pretty good, but you know what's interesting is when you take a nonstick pan and you use it for a period of time, and then at my restaurants in the past, my first restaurant was a French restaurant, and we just went through pans like crazy, and then we would take them all to get them coated. Once a year, we'd ship off half the pans during the slow season and have them powder coated. And if you think about it, they would lose that powder coating, every 6 months, and that was going into somebody's food.
Eh? Yeah, they have the ceramic coated ones that are really nice and a little less.
Yeah, I've seen those at Costco. They're a little pricey for me, but they had a small wok shaped one, but like a wok but smaller with a handle. Oh yeah, I want to put it in my shopping cart, but God, it was way too much. But, you know, I've got so many pots and pans. If I bring pots and pans home, I think Mrs. Chef's going to be a little bit upset about that. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. You have found us at Cooking Like a Pro. We will be back in just a moment.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Feeling a wee bit green with envy for a proper St. Patty's Day feast? Well, put on your dancing shoes and head to Black Bear Diner. We're bringing back the classics you crave, like our legendary corned beef and cabbage. Slow roasted, thick sliced with all the fixins. It's the real deal. Think of it. Tender corned beef, melt in your mouth cabbage, and that horseradish cream sauce. Oh, it's a lucky bite. Find your lucky feast Friday through Monday, St. Patty's Day weekend, at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Redding.
Black Bear Diner.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. And I want to just take a quick moment to personally thank Charlou, Kathy, and the whole Charlou's gang down there at Charlou's Tap House for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast. We are here because they are helping. Anyway, located in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, just a little bit south of town, one of the few family restaurants left in the area, which is always kind of sad to me. It used to be all family restaurants when I was younger, back in the 1900s, a little before that. But anyway, they're open 7 days a week, serving the best homemade pizza, delicious pasta, crisp salads, and as well as creamy, authentic Italian gelato. Reminds me of having gelato in Florence. I actually had a lot of gelato in Germany as well, just because all the Italians go north. Well, anyway, I probably ought to finish this read in here. Anyway, get the best deal in town. They have a rewards program. You can sign up for that and get great bargains, and those are actually instantly available to you, so be sure you do that as well. And even check out the beer wall and next door the adventure room. Just a beautiful place to take your kids and have a birthday and let the little tykes run nuts. So anyway, Charlie will even teach them how to make pizza. All right, so Chef Cal, I'm back here and chatting with Chef Sadie, and we're just talking about kind of stuff you find in your kitchen. And one of the things that a lot of people, you know, I think spend, unfortunately, probably too much money on because they, I mean, you want good, I'm going to talk about knives, and you want good knives. But you only need so many, right? I mean, what's the main knife you use at home, Chef?
Oh, my chef's knife.
Chef knife?
Yeah.
Okay. 6 inch, 8 inch?
8 inch.
10 inch? Okay. I use an 8 inch too. It fits good in my hand. I do like a 6 inch for certain things. If I'm cutting things that are closer to my hand, a little smaller, I kind of like a 6. 10s are just too big. Mm-hmm. You see those 10s and 12s every once in a while, and there's like, you know, I don't know. It's not a, I don't need a weapon, you know, but anyway, then, okay, how about second knife? Second favorite knife?
Probably my paring knife. I use that a lot.
Yeah, paring knife. So that's a mm-hmm. short knife. Usually they're in between 3 and 4 inches long. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the blade, the length of the blade, not the handle. And just a short knife. It's going to be used for trimming vegetables and fruits and variety of things. But it's, yeah, that you have something kind of small, something to, you know, if you're going to, you know, peel tomatoes or something like that. Slicer is always nice to have. A slicer, the reason you really want a slicer, now slicer, when we talk about slicer, think of something that you would cut like a prime rib with. Something long. Because if you don't have a nice slicer and you're cutting, you know, prime rib or ham or turkey or something that's a long piece, a long and muscled piece of meat, the challenge you're gonna have is you're gonna see a kind of a sawing action going on if you're trying to use a French knife. To do what the job of what a slicer should do.
And of course, a good bread knife.
Good bread knife. So the difference between a slicer and a bread knife?
The ridges, the edges, yeah, it's a little more
serrated
on it.
Yeah. It's got that serrated edge to it, so it chews through. And you really need a good serrated knife. And when I get a serrated knife, I always want one that's offset. And when they say offset, that's a knife that you can grasp the handle with, and let's say you're cutting on a cutting board, and the blade itself takes a little jog down or jig down about an inch before it goes to the blade. So the blade is on the cutting board, and your hand is still has room for your fingers underneath. So, you know, that's kind of the best slicer that I use for bread, tomatoes, anything that has a skin,
yeah,
anything that has a skin on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, if you need to kind of chew through that skin, so make sure you have the right knives. Cleavers. I was going through my knives the other day. I found a cleaver. Actually, I was going through a drawer, and I found this cleaver that Martin Yan had signed for me. Mm. I don't know if anyone's seen him. There's a video out there. You know, he bones out an entire chicken, and it's like 7 seconds. Maybe it's less. I remember, it's fast. And he did it at a conference, a chef's conference I was at once. And then he was selling the knives also, so I went up and had him sign one for me. But yeah, look that up. Martin Yan, if you get a chance out there, folks, look it up, Martin Yan. He was really one of the first chefs, I would say, that brought Asian cuisine, Pacific Rim cuisine, to the States. You really didn't see a whole lot of that, earlier on. I'd probably give him a lot of credit. Also Roy Yamamuchi, he's more Hawaiian, like Alan Wong, but you know, Hawaiian's kind of in the middle of the, I mean, obviously I would describe it as being tropical, but it's still got those Asian twists and flares, and it's still got some of that. Yes, I'm from the mainland, so, you know, it's still got a little bit of, you know, I guess American homeland influence. But yeah, you know, I like, you know, the thing I like to eat over in Hawaii is spam. One of the few places they still have spam.
Yeah, they do spam sushi.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I was trying to remember what that's called. It's got a name.
What's
for
that? Subu? Yeah. Wasabi, something like that.
Yeah. I've done it before. I can't remember off the top of my head. But other knives, bony knife. Bony knife's always good to have. A bony knife, you want something that has a real good bend to it. Because, you know, if you're taking a breast off of a raw chicken, you need something that's going to be flexible enough to bend. You know, you're not going to get that out of a cleaver. You're not going to get any bend out of your French knife. You know, so you want something that bends well. Maybe a fillet knife for seafood. It's always kind of a nice one. And then utility knife it's generally going to be about 6 inches long. But basically a utility knife is kind of a knife that you use for everything. It's kind of like that, like if you just don't need a specific knife, that's the one you grab. You know, so yeah, that's why it's called utility. Stainless steel though. I always stick with stainless steel, or carbon steel. Both of those work. Both of them hold a good edge. High carbon stainless. I mean, you can spend as much as you want on knives. They have them out there that are sharp as swords. Yeah.
I love mine with the Japanese steel.
Oh, yeah. I have a couple of those. That's Sankui and mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what the other names are. But, those are comfortable knives, mm-hmm. and they'll hold a nice edge. And moving on from knives, the one thing related to it is knowing how to sharpen your knife. Remember, a sharp knife is always safer than a dull knife, right? Because on a dull knife, you have to apply more pressure, more of a chance, I guess, of slipping. Is kind of the main reason. But and if you cut yourself, you know, you definitely want to cut yourself with a sharp knife because it's going to heal faster. You know, if you have to get stitches or something. And I've been around for, I've seen a lot of cuts. I've cut myself my share. Generally, it's not in cutting food. It's in doing something stupid. I remember the worst cut I had. I was cutting the rind off a piece of cheese. I wasn't paying attention. I had the knife pull. I was pulling it towards me. I was doing this big British thing. And at the end, they have a big cheese courses and stuff. And I, wham, all the way down to the bone. Mm. Anyway, the doctor fixed me up, and I was that's a very different story. I have to put that one in my book. I'm one of the few chefs to have my own gynecologist. There happened to be a gynecologist that was there at this black tie event that I did, and he took me back to his office, and it was back down in town, and it was almost like 3 a.m. at that point. And he put the stitches in me. I got my episiotomy, and boom, I was off. I was ready to go. It was funny. We're going back in the office. He said, come back in a couple of weeks. And I walk in the office. I walk in the office, and there's like 20 women in this office. And I go up to the front, and I say, this is a Chef Cow. I'm here to see the doctor. And she kind of, leans forward. She goes, we only see women here. And I said, well, just tell the doctor, that Chef Cow's here. So I go and I sit there, and all 20 women are looking at me like, what is going on with this guy? This is way before the trend. They know the others, whatever. Anyway, so he called me, and, a little bit later, a few minutes later, I went walking in, and he, I didn't have to get up in the stirrups, that went off the rails on that one. But anyway, but sharpening knives, keep them sharp. Have a stone, and then also have a steel. A steel, is just, if you've ever seen someone in the kitchen and they're just kind of flaring back on a long piece of metal, and then they're just sharpening it by going on one side and going on the other side, that will help straighten out the tips of the blade. But generally, once the knife gets dull, you got to hit it on a stone. So, and there are a lot of sharpening. I don't know. What do you have at home? Do you have like a little plug-in sharpening thing that you run knives on? How do you sharpen knives at home?
I have an old school steel,
a stone?
Stone, yeah. And then I have a steel to keep the edge on.
Yeah. Well, there's so many people that buy these things that are out there. I've never had one that didn't actually hurt the knife. I should say I do have one. So actually the one I use. I've got a diamond, mm-hmm. and it's got the three different, actually there's a total of 6 different levels of diamond smoothness. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can shave when you get done with one of those. But anyway, I did want to, gosh, we're not going to have time to get into that. Maybe we'll jump into, we can talk a little bit about it. But just other necessities, things that what are some of the gadgets that you have in your pantry at home, Chef?
Well, let's see. I love my microplane for zesting lemons and, yes. ginger and garlic and all the things.
Microplanes are great.
Yeah, I love my Silpat mat.
Yep, Silpat. And, go ahead and explain what it is, because most people probably have no idea.
It's magical if you're baking cookies or, bread, so you don't have to line it. It's a nice nonstick mat that you can bake on.
Yeah, so it's high temp, so, mm-hmm. it goes right in the oven with your cookies or whatever, and it kind of forms a little protection on there. It definitely gives you more time. Mm-hmm. We used to use them all the time when we were competing for things, because you want to bring something up super slow, so you have maybe, you can mold it a little better when it comes out. But I like my stick blender, I guess they call them. I call mm-hmm. it burr mixer. Mm-hmm. But I use that thing all the time.
Oh, my milk frother. I do love that in the morning.
For coffee. Okay. Colander, or if you get a super fine colander, you get a chinois, mm-hmm. something that's going to, literally a chinois will take the seeds out of like blackberries. If you're making like a blackberry jam and you want to turn it into a jelly, not have any seeds or anything in it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always called it. Mm-hmm. If it's got whole fruit. So you can use that there, or you can go through some cheesecloth, kind of that hanging around, or, coffee filters. I used to use a lot of coffee filters. Mm-hmm. I actually have a coffee grinder at home, but I've never used it for coffee. I use it for seasonings, mm-hmm. for spices that I want to grind up.
So, I have a separate one just for that.
Yeah, the coffee would taste pretty funky, I think, if I did that. But anyway, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Sadie. Back in just a moment on Cooking Like a Pro.
I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, chicken, turkeys, rabbits,
you name it!
A cancer diagnosis changes everything. But at Valor Oncology, located right here in Reading, you'll never face it alone. At some places, you'll see a rotating door of doctors, unfamiliar faces who don't know your history. But at Valor, you'll see the same expert team, a team that knows you, your treatment plan, and your journey. We have a Harvard-trained oncologist, a highly skilled female breast surgeon, compassionate and experienced nurses and nurse practitioners, and an incredibly dedicated staff that genuinely cares for you and your family. Our cutting-edge technology rivals top universities, but it's right here in Reading. You deserve the best care and a team that stays by your side. Call 530-900-4000 or visit valor.org to schedule a consultation. Valor Oncology, rooted in Reading, focused on you.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
I'm Marilyn.
And I'm Abby, her BFF.
We're in Riverfront Playhouse's production of Ripcord by David Lindsay Abair, directed by John Welch.
March 7th through the 23rd, join us for this hilarious comedy about feisty elderly women.
Us, who become roommates in a retirement community. See how our comic playful rivalry leads to a series of funny and unexpected pranks.
Grab your tickets now at riverfrontplayhouse.net. Sponsored by this station and these amazing pro arts businesses.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Yeah, Cheeseburger in Paradise. Oh, yes. I don't know. I like cheeseburgers. I'll take a cheeseburger anywhere. Doesn't have to be in Paradise, you know. But that's just something. Take a cheeseburger, and I'm going down a rabbit hole here. I was going to talk about something else. But you think about people say, oh, well, how do I, you know, change things and modify things? And one of the key components to it is being able to do just different things. Don't think that you have a certain, way it has to be done or certain ingredient has to go into it. That's why we experiment. That's why we have fun. Be flexible. You know, not just we've been talking about tools. You can be flexible with your tools, but, be flexible with your ingredients as well. You know, I mean, if a recipe calls for, you know, baby carrots, maybe try a different root vegetable. So the dish still makes sense because the carrot's a root vegetable, but maybe you're going to use beets or turnips or jicama or, you know, there's a bunch of stuff out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm actually a beet person myself. So we were going to talk about St. Patrick's Day. All right, so St. Patrick's Day, very special day in our family. It was grandma, my grandma and grandpa, my mom's folks, got married on St. Patrick's Day.
Aw, nice.
Yeah, so that was their anniversary. And just last year, so coming up this St. Patrick's Day, will be the one-year anniversary of my daughter Casey. Casey and Zachary out in Tennessee, Knoxville, Tennessee. And they got my granddaughter, little Juniper. Juniper. Yeah, she was born on December 19th. Yeah, and 9 months and 2 days after the wedding. So must have been a great honeymoon. Anyway, but St. Patrick's Day. So here's one of the things when I was a corporate chef for 60 restaurants one time. They had a corned beef sandwich. And the thing about corned beef is it shrinks so much. So what most people do, the way I've seen it when I was being raised, was they just throw it in a pot of water, boil it till it's tender. you know, or you can, but here's what I found after working with it for quite a while in a test kitchen is that it doesn't get tender in the cooking process. It gets tender in the resting process. So if you take your corned beef and say you cook it for a couple of hours and then leave it in the oven, cover it with foil, plastic, whatever you want to cover with, and let it sit in the oven for another couple hours, another 2 to 3 hours. And all that connective tissue, which holds the muscle fiber together, remember the muscle fiber is, that's the muscle, the connective tissue is within it, but that holds the muscle fiber together, and it allows that time for that to melt. And so you get this beautiful, roast of corned beef that has more flavor, because the flavor didn't get, you know, boiled out in the water. And it also has a lot less shrinkage.
And also the temperature of the water that you're poaching it in, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't need to be boiling, but about 165, you know, just low and slow in the crock pot to hold its size, right?
Yeah, you had mentioned crock pot, and you're right. The thing about a crock pot, I wouldn't, you know, take a piece of corned beef and, you know, throw a, you know, 5 pound piece of corned beef and, you know, 15 gallons of water, right? But in a crock pot, then what you're doing is you're preserving all that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when, you plug it in the morning. Mom used to tell me to do that.
Yeah, your pickling spice. Yeah, maybe a beer, your broth.
Yeah, beer in the broth. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's always a good thing too. So how about accompaniments for, to go on the corned beef? Not as a side, but going on it.
As like a sauce?
Yeah, something like a sauce.
Well, usually I do like braised cabbage.
Braised cabbage on the side.
To go with it. Mm-hmm. But you could do maybe like a whipped feta on the side with the potatoes. Like
probably anything creamy. Because, mm-hmm. you know, because it might have a little, well, it's brined, so it's been cured. If you smoke it, well, then you have pastrami, so it's not going to be smoked. But, yeah, I think, for me, sauce, I take the mother sauce of Hollandaise. And I just add Dijon mustard, and the French call it the Dijonnaise. It's what we serve with lamb, you know, mint jelly. Mm. But then they serve that with lamb, but it goes great. I tell you, Hollandaise with a little Dijon mustard in there, oh, man. You could just, yeah.
Hard to go wrong with the Hollandaise, right?
yeah, butter, yeah, fat. Yeah. You can't go wrong with fat and egg yolks.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so you said braised cabbage. You know, you can also take your cabbage, quarter it, and then just barbecue it. That's something kind of fun to do too. Give it a little different texture and definitely a different flavor. I have a great cabbage dish that I got from, where was I? I went to a restaurant down in Napa. It's called Mustards, and they had I used to serve this with a Cornish game hen that I would eviscerate and we would roast it off. But it was, red cabbage, and they sauteed this red cabbage, just cook it down till it was, you know, the texture was pretty much gone. It was like just on the other side of al dente. And, but then they flavored it with brown sugar, apple cider vinegar, and cumin. And the thing was those three flavors were just perfectly balanced. So you could get all of them. So there wasn't overly sweet, wasn't overly spicy, wasn't overly tart. But it had all three of those components, and they're perfectly matched with this red cabbage. And, oh, man, was it good. Mm. You know, I mean, you go out to a restaurant and I wouldn't say steal the recipe, but you get the idea.
Oh, yeah, you reverse engineer it. And maybe like a cabbage au gratin.
Oh, yeah.
Might be nice, you know?
Sounds fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how about a starch then? So, you know, grains. I guess we're going to talk about grains in the next section.
Soda bread, right? Yeah. It's kind of a classic. And roasted red potatoes.
But steamed potatoes, roasted potatoes. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, well, they'll call for like a steamed potato, but here's where you can be creative, like we talked about earlier. Instead of steaming that potato or boiling that potato, roast it. Get some more flavor on there.
Yeah, with some olive oil,
seasoning,
garlic.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see, you're an olive oil push. I'm a butter. Mm-hmm. They've been lying to us for years. Butter is good for you. Yeah, I mean, if you get the batter right, you know, you get like a little popsicle stick, and I think deep fried butter would be something that
I love butter. I'm not a butter hater.
Well, that's the top three ingredients, right, in mm-hmm. French cooking: butter, mm-hmm. butter, butter. So that's something that Julia Child would say. I won't do my Julia Child impression. Oh, butter! I gotta get the butter. Anyway, but so St. Patrick's Day, other root vegetables, carrots.
Rutabaga.
Rutabaga's a good one. Sometimes you'll see more of a medley of vegetables, a bit more of like a cauliflower broccoli thing. We used to do that with our Chateaubriand. And let's see. Okay, how about dessert? I used to do a mint pie.
Mm.
It's a chocolate mint pie. Chocolate cookie crumb kind of a crust on it. And then you take cream to mint with a nice whipping cream, a little bit of white cream de cocoa and green cream to mint to flavor it. And just set up a nice little wedge of that. So that's a good one. It's kind of like a grasshopper for dessert.
I remember that dessert. It was really good.
Yeah. what else? Let's say you wanted to do appetizers, you know, for something like that. You know, an appetizer for St. Patrick's Day. People are coming over early. You want some stuff for them to pick on. Do whatever you want. But the one thing I would say is you never want to have an appetizer be repeated in the meal. You know, so you'd want to do something, I mean, a little bit different, you know, whatever it happened to be. Salad, you know, I always like a nice good spinach salad. I think a spinach bacon salad with some grated eggs and maybe some red onion.
Yeah, or some endive with a little goat cheese in it.
You're a goat cheese person, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Did you go with me when we went down to that goat cheese place down in Cottonwood? Yeah, that was great,
there,
huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was the Chef's Association. That was a long time ago, decades ago. And we brought a bunch of food, and we matched the food to the goat cheese.
I think I did a wasabi.
You can remember that far back?
Okay. With, like, a poached shrimp and, you know, canapé.
I
think
it was
something like that. I think you did a
goat
cheese cheesecake. You had a pastry chef at the time.
Yeah. I think I
helped with that, I believe.
I like the goats themselves. Just, you know, they're cute. And I can't remember what the name of that creamery is. But, it's just down south of us. But the thing about their goat cheese is, and most people, they get turned off on goat cheese. I don't know how we got around to goat cheese. But they get turned off by it because of the acidity to it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I love goat cheese, but I don't want something where acid is the first and the most powerful thing I taste. You know, and that was the one thing that they had down there. And I like a creamy goat cheese. Taking goat cheese and maybe folding it with a little bit of cream cheese or maybe just a touch
herbs.
Of sour cream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then throw in some herbs, whatever flavors you want.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of flavors, what is this thing you brought into the studio here? This looks like an herb. I've never seen this before.
It's in the broccoli family.
Mm-hmm. It's got a little. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a.
You eat it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like you would broccolini, but it's flowering, so it's essentially like a flowering broccolini.
It does look like flowering broccolini.
Yeah, so it's so pretty, you know, for spring when you've got the flowers and the flowers taste so good.
Go great in a salad, go great on a grill. I bet it'd be great on fish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's just one thing that people don't do is they think, oh, I'm just going to put it on there, it sprouts. You can still cook them. Cook them quickly. I mean, just a really quick in the pan, a little bit of seasoning, you know, butter, whatever you want to do with the flavor profile, and then just put it on top.
Or olive oil.
Olive oil, yeah. Well, that's one thing about the thing about the herbs. You know, they a little bit generally goes a long way. So just think about the protein. Make sure that you're not overpowering it. But it's always nice to have that cleansing. It's usually more of a cleansing element. You know, generally you're going to get bitter. You know, out of these things, a lot of them are kind of peppery, you know, and so they add a little bit of spice to it. Also chop them up, throw them in a salad.
Mm-hmm. And they're good for you. You know, that's where
Right?
You should eat something green with every meal.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll work on that. Yeah. I'll have, chocolate chip mint ice cream. Okay. That's green.
And then a little bite of the broccoli.
Well, we're talking about stuff you brought here. So this is a strawberry crisp?
It's a crumb bar.
Strawberry crumb bar. Why strawberries?
So my students, we actually went over to Providence Farm this week.
Okay.
And we helped.
Say hi to Bud for me.
I will. We helped plant some strawberry starts. We got this in the ground, and then some other students, they helped to get the ground ready and raked up some stuff.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah, we're going to partner with them and do some farm-to-table food. And
now, if people want to get product from there, can people go up and purchase it there, or how's that work?
They're just getting the planting in right now.
But when they've been harvesting, and it's down on 273?
Yep, they have a farm stand that they're going to put out in the parking lot of that new trailhead right in front of their farm.
Well, there you go. Help the local people. And, but it's a mm-hmm. great program. It really is. I've been there, numerous times. I like the fact that they grow plants in water. That's kind of a cool thing. That's actually the first time I'd ever seen that. So mm-hmm. we're going to take our last quick break here at Cooking Like a Pro. Again, Chef Kyle with Chef Sadie. Back in just a moment.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Monte Cristo Classic Number 2. This Figueroa has been described as one of the world's great cigars, a silky Connecticut shade wrapper in combination with the best Dominican tobaccos form this perfectly constructed cigar. The smooth aroma of toasted almonds, vanilla, coffee, and spice round out this classic stick. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill. When I found you.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Cooking Like a Pro. Oh, I should have some blueberries. We should be talking about blueberries. Yeah, I like that. Blueberry Hill. Blueberries, let's see. Well, you did this little crisp thing here. You could have done that with blueberries.
Definitely.
You know what goes real good with blueberries? Duck.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. I do a pan-seared duck with a kind of a balsamic blueberry sauce.
Yeah. I was going to say lemons, but yeah, of course.
Duck. Yeah. There you go. Well, I'm a carnivore, mm-hmm. but we were going to talk a little bit about legumes and grains, kind of, you know, pastas kind of fall in that category, but legumes, the thing about them, basically we're talking about a bean, right? A bean that's out there, could be any kind of bean, white bean, chili bean, chickpeas, anything that falls in the bean category, but they're always high in vitamins and, minerals, of course, because they grow.
Good fiber.
Yeah, good fiber, soluble fiber, so that's always a good thing. And they actually work real good as an alternative to meat. I think most people that I know that are vegetarians, that's how they'll get their protein. They'll get the protein by, you know, some kind of a bean dish.
Or beans and rice make a complete protein, so typically, yeah, they're gonna go together.
So, you know, beans are good. Grains, all kinds of different things you can do with grains. I'm a real fan. The thing about grains is, for the most part, unless you talk about, wheat berry or maybe, black or wild rice, those take a long time to cook, but most grains cook really quickly. Couscous and things like that. I always like quinoa. Anyway, go ahead. You were going to say something.
Oh, have you ever sprouted any beans or quinoa?
While I was cooking them?
No, just sprout it overnight, and it helps increase the nutritional value. It's like doing a sprout. So you can...
So how do you sprout it?
In water.
You have your chicken lay on
and
it?
And just drain it and let it sit there, and you just rinse it a couple times a day.
So you
and let it sit in the window seal, like you would sprouts, you know?
But not in the sun.
And the window seal.
So it kind of reconstitutes and starts growing?
Yeah, it'll get a tail.
It will sprout.
It'll sprout, yeah. And so you can, you know, you want fresh beans, obviously.
Sounds like a lot of work.
I mean, if you're doing sprouts already.
I mean, how many tails do you need to get a portion? I mean, a lot, right?
No, I only do like a fourth a cup and at a time.
Okay. All right. Well, here you go, folks. Let it sprout. You know, sprouts, that's something I like. I mean, that's one thing that's gotten real popular over the years lately. You see sprouts a lot more than you ever used to. I like them as an alternative on a sandwich. Mm-hmm. I mean, lettuce is 97% water for the most part. I mean, a little bit, maybe less water in whatever, romaine or something. But iceberg certainly is all water. But a sprout, you'll get all that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
You
and
get that spice, that bitterness, especially radish sprouts. Radish sprouts is something that I really enjoy. But they can overpower. Again, you know, it's all about, you know, balance. But it's just a great different flavor. Mm-hmm. You know, when you taste it, it's definitely different.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I seen a recipe here. It was risotto, but they're using fennel. And fennel is a very, very underutilized. Not, you don't see it being used, you know, much. It's got that licorice kind of anise flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really good when you char grill it because mm-hmm. it can be kind of woody, you know. So you want it fresh, you want it tender. Certain things that certain dishes you use it in. Of course, fennel seed you'll see in a lot of ground things, you know, sausage and especially Italian sausage, you'll see that. Let's see what else we got. Different types of beans, white beans. Oh, I love white beans. Mm-hmm. I had this white bean dish once cooked. Where was I? I was in Southern California at the Universal Studios, and we were competing, and we were doing a practice session down there for competition. And then the chef for the entire Universal Studios, they had like 70 places that just sold pizza. I mean, this place was huge. And they went through the process. And he made me this bean dish, and it was so good. I remember it was beans, white beans, and then it had bacon, caramelized shallots, pimento, and then red wine vinegar.
Mm.
Some of you just sit there and eat a whole bowlful.
I usually do white beans, diced stewed tomatoes, and spinach. Kind of like a nice little soup with that, Parmesan cheese and a crusty bread.
Yeah, throw some sausage in there and you'd have, mm-hmm. and you'd be just like going to, Olive Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But a lot of things that fall in that category. Lentils are always something that I enjoy. Again, all these things are just great fiber. Mm-hmm. Lentils cook real quick. If you get a green lentil and you kind of keep cooking it, really it's not a lentil, it's a pea. And then you have, you know, your split pea soup.
Lentil curry or lentil with salmon is so good.
See, you always come up with these weird seasonings. I've never seen your seasoning cupboard, but sounds like it's got a lot of interesting things in it. I mentioned quinoa earlier.
Love quinoa.
Super, super good for you and very flavorful. A lot of these things, they have a nutty kind of a flavor to them, you know, and it's just something you don't really get in a lot of other things.
And it's a complete protein on its own.
Complete protein.
Yeah. So it's a great substitute if you're not eating meat.
Yeah. I mentioned wild rice. In fact, more wild rice was grown up here in Northern California than anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I remember they used to dry it. They put it in a kiln and they would dry it. And I had one restaurant, and all of our house salads, when you ordered, you know, dinner, you got a super salad. You know, this was before everything went a la carte, which kind of really screwed the pooch on that one. But, now it's, you know, $85 for, you know, a burger and a salad. We had this puffed wild rice, and it was soft, kind of like, it was just kind of soft and crunchy, but it wasn't like really hard. And we used to sprinkle it over all of our salads. It had a beautiful little salad and variety of garnishes on there, and it was topped with that. So basically it kind of became the crouton, the textural component.
Mm.
So that was a good one as well. Let's see, what else? What are the kind of grains you got out there? A lot of, you know, things like fava beans, lima beans, those you really don't see those being used much.
Kids don't really like those. I mean, I like them, but, you know, I like the giant ones. Have you seen the giant fava beans?
Yeah, little honking ones. Yeah, you could.
Those are soft and buttery, and I think you can get away with those a little bit more.
Mm. How about black-eyed peas?
On New Year's.
Yep.
I like to have that, right?
For good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. That's I didn't really get mine in until a couple of days after. Maybe that's why my luck's going the way it is. It's going great. Oh, turtle beans, or, you know, black beans. Mm-hmm. Black beans are great. And one thing that I'll tell you when I'm cooking my black beans, and this is a great little tip for you out there, folks, is I'll take, like half stock, maybe it's a vegetable stock or poultry stock, and then the other half of the liquid. And remember, most all of these starches will increase 2.5 times their size. So kind of think that in mind when you're dumping it in a pot. Whatever you dump in there, rice, beans, whatever, it's going to increase about 2.5 times its size. So understand that for volume. But the one thing is I do half stock, and then the other half I'd use coffee.
Oh,
so
like
we save the leftover coffee, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the night. Not that, meaning out of the cups, but, you know, just... You know, you got coffee, you always have to, you never know how much coffee to make, so you always have some left over, and I'd tell them to keep the coffee and cool it down and put it in the fridge, and then I would just use it to make my bean soups.
It's kind of a Creole kind of
flavor. and it gives it just kind of a uniqueness. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people would pick it up and say, oh, that's, you know, Folgers or whatever. But
well, and black beans are the highest in fiber, and black foods have been linked to longevity, so it's good to eat some black foods.
Oh, black beans. Mm-hmm.
Black rice.
Good to know. All right. Well, now, how about this whole thing about flagellants with, the beans? I think if you soak them.
That's what my grandma said, yeah. If you soak your beans first, then they don't make you gassy. Mm-hmm.
Not as much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you can soak them. They say you can even put a little bit of, is it baking soda in with them? I don't like putting baking soda in anything that's being boiled or steamed like that, because it takes almost all the nutritional value out of it. Makes it bright green. I mean, if you're doing green beans, oh, a beautiful bright green bean. No nutritional value left in it. But anyway, basically what it is, the gas is just those complex sugars that kind of get stored up, and they got, they're so big they can't be broken down. They end up going in the intestines, and we don't need to go into the rest of that discussion. But anyway, yeah, beans, And again, it's great. It's a great side for anything. I know chili, chili beans. Chili's always something I like. Van Camp, pork and beans.
Staple, classic.
Classic staple. Yeah, it's been around for a long time, I'm sure. But anyway, so there's a lot of different things you can use. We didn't even get into rice, like wild rice. So you know that there's more actual Calrose is the standard medium grain rice. It's called Calrose, and there's more Calrose grown in the San Joaquin Valley in California than anywhere. Mm. Anywhere. Really. Look it up.
That's awesome.
Don't believe everything you read on the internet, but
well, like you mentioned, lentils, those are even more fiber than black beans, so those are great to get into your diet. And one of my favorite, my little recipe with that, sweet potatoes. In there with your lentils and a little bit of lime juice and cilantro. Simple, easy, super good.
Mm-hmm. Sounds, kind of exotic. What is that, more kind of Hispanic or whatever?
A little Indian almost.
A little Indian?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I'm really enjoying a lot now is the Indian flavors are coming in. You know, and you can find those in certain stores. You can find, because almost all of them have, a Mexican section, and they'll have an Asian Pacific Rim type of section. But, if I want Asian ingredients, I just go to an Asian store. But you do need to know what you're buying. I used to get all my quail down at the Asian store. Got a great deal on it. But a lot of, green papaya, different things that were kind of unique that I could buy at an Asian store and then bring on and do kind of some cool stuff. Long beans,
mm-hmm.
Chinese long beans. I just love those things. They just go round and round on the plate. I wouldn't even cut them, get people, figure out how they can figure out how they want to eat them themselves, but. Anyway, a lot of fun things you can do with the different rices and legumes. And again, it's just, these are all just alternatives to just the basic potato. Whether it's a mashed potato or baked potato or scallop potatoes.
Sweet potato.
A lot of things you could do with potato.
Mm-hmm.
But that side is generally going to be some sort of starch. And if you lean towards, a nice grain or something. Matter of fact, go out to, off Airport Road there. They have the, Moore's Flour, Bob's Red Mill.
Oh, love that place.
They have everything there. Mm-hmm. you name it, it's there. We didn't mention couscous, but, and they got like Israeli couscous. I like that. The bigger one. Yeah. But just a ton of things that you can get out there. But anyway, we do appreciate, Sadie. Thank you for coming in and standing in for us this evening. And we've had a lot of fun chatting back and forth about food, cooking like a pro. We are happy that you joined us. So have a wonderful weekend. God bless you all and, cooking like a pro. We'll talk to you next week.
KCNR, Shasta ready.
Your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.